5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
I know you're gonna dig this.
Welcome to the Barrett Sports Media Podcast.
Think we could listen to the radio or something?
Radio? Who needs a radio?
Featuring the biggest names and newsmakers from the world of sports media.
Don't act like you're not impressed.
Now, here's your host, the president of Barrett Sports Media, Jason Barrett.
It's been a little while, but I'm back and ready to dive in once again to another edition of the Barrett Sports Media Podcast. If this is your first time listening, welcome in. I am Jason Barrett. A reminder, I keep this podcast commercial free. The only thing I ask of you is to take a minute to subscribe and leave a review for us on iTunes. It helps others learn about the show, and that itself is payment enough. I want to apologize for the delay between episodes, but business takes precedence, and the one downside sometimes to running your own company is that you're one person. In that case, I have to prioritize, and as much as I love doing this, taking care of my clients always comes first. I've been on the road 5 times over the past 2 months, and I'll be back on the road this week for a quick trip to Chicago. Part of that trip will include sitting down for a chat with 670 The Score program director Mitch Rosen, so be on the lookout for that in the future. Regarding today's episode, I'm pleased to welcome sports radio veteran Mark Willard to the podcast. Mark is on the air weekdays from 12 to 3 in San Diego with Rich Ornberger on Extra 1360. He's worked in Los Angeles, grew up in the Bay Area, and he's performed locally and nationally, so I encourage you to stick around for our conversation. But it seems like there's been an avalanche lately of sports media stories, and one way I like to cover them is by sorting through 5 topics in 5 minutes. It's something I like to call the 5 in 5.
There are 5 minutes remaining.
On Friday, November 17th, Mike and Mike will sign off on ESPN and ESPN Radio, bringing to a close a show that has occupied mornings for 17 years. Greeny and Golic have their fair share of fans and detractors, but the one thing that can't be argued is that they've forged their place in sports radio history. They were sports radio's version of Felix and Oscar, the Odd Couple, two guys with different styles and backgrounds who had exceptional chemistry and conducted themselves in a classy manner. Maybe they weren't edgy, interactive with callers, or unfiltered with their opinions, but their interviews hit the right notes, the pace of their show moved, and they talked about the stories that most people cared about, and they were comfortable enough for you to listen to as an adult with your children present. Since it was announced that ESPN was splitting up the mics, many have voiced their disappointment with the network's decision. That just goes to show that sometimes you're not appreciated or loved until you're no longer there. A tip of the cap to Greeny and Golic on a job well done. Michael McCarthy of the Sporting News hinted at it weeks ago, and Richard Deitch of Sports Illustrated added specifics last week. Another round of layoffs are on the horizon for ESPN. Over 100 jobs are expected to be eliminated, and although it sucks to hear this news doesn't mean ESPN is going bankrupt or out of business, or that it won't further invest in quality people and programs. It simply means ESPN is no longer different than any other company operating a business in 2017. They've avoided these pitfalls in the past, which was remarkable considering that few did. Now, they're just another broadcast outlet trying to super serve stockholders and remain financially productive. If there's one thing we've learned from the past few layoffs, losing a job at ESPN doesn't mean your career is over. Yes, you'll have to do it differently and adjust, but the cream rises to the top, and those left on the outside soon may have to find a new way to make a significant contribution, but sometimes that can be exciting. The FCC has approved the Intercom-CBS merger, and it's great news for sports radio folks. CBS was the gold standard in the format. Entercom was also bullish on sports radio. With this partnership, they become the biggest player in the space. The company will be able to give clients exposure on over 40 different play-by-play broadcasts. They can deliver campaigns that run in the majority of East and West Coast markets, and they can attach them to the format's biggest and best local and national on-air personalities. The only major sports radio brand that they lost in this transaction was 98.5 The Sports Hub. That's a huge win for Entercom. I haven't agreed on everything with David Field during my time knowing him, but I admire and appreciate his passion and belief in this format. With Entercom in control, the future for sports radio is extremely bright. Dave Portnoy has confirmed that Barstool Sports is getting its own channel on SiriusXM. The company has had its own show on the satellite service, but will now have control of their own 24/7 radio outlet. This is a smart move by Steve Cohen and the SiriusXM folks. Satellite radio can afford to be edgier and riskier and take chances on brands like Barstool, which operate in that fashion. Meanwhile, Barstool extends their brand on a service which plays to their strengths. The pairing should help Sirius in attracting millennials while improving Barstool's professional credibility. Unlike the ESPN marriage, this one feels right. What will be interesting is if Barstool is able to build momentum as a national radio brand. The national sports radio network space isn't as hot as it once was, leaving the door wide open for Barstool to burst through it and change the game. The only question, does the company have enough great content and on-air talent to excel 24 hours a day? Mike Felger of 98.5 The Sports Hub in Boston came under fire last week after blasting Roy Halladay the day after he died for recklessly flying an airplane. He called him an idiot and moron and suggested he got what he deserved. The insensitive commentary earned Felger a suspension from TV partner NBC Sports Boston, but not from his radio employer, The Hub, although he did offer a public apology on the air for his remarks. Issues like this lead to people demanding blood and a loss of work, and although I thought Felger's thoughts were ill-timed and tasteless, I didn't think terminating him was the answer. Was the suspension worthy? I think so. But I didn't lose sleep over the station not taking that route. Nonetheless, if you're an on-air talent, you should learn from this. Sometimes, things are better left unsaid, and you do yourself and your station no good by not thinking things through. When someone dies and is yet to be buried and their wife and kids are in mourning, it isn't smart to cause them more pain and additional distractions by being insensitive. No opinion of yours is that important. And that concludes the 5 and 5. If you want to share your thoughts on any of those stories, you can reach me on Twitter at SportsRadioPD or by email, jbarrett@sportsradiopd.com. It's time now to shift our attention to this episode's featured discussion, and it takes place with Mark Willard of Extra 1360 in San Diego and Fox Sports Radio. Mark has been in the industry for almost 2 decades, building a respected brand in Southern California. We went through his career and a number of industry-related topics, so without further ado, here's our conversation. 3, 2, 1. Let's start with this. You're a Bay Area guy who's essentially built over 15 years in Southern California, so I'm sure the family has to be thrilled about that. Being a Northern Cal guy, I'm sure that had to be the first spot you were subjected to sports radio, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, that was I grew up listening to KNBR and kind of just becoming that type of fan that comes from that area. You know it well, Jason. I mean, that area in many ways is a West Coast city that has little East Coast aspects of it sports-wise. I mean, there are differences, but, you know, those are some of the most underrated brands, I think, in sports. The Giants brand has been so big. Like, you know, people there, you live and breathe that if you grew up there. And then, you know, I grew up in the 80s in San Francisco when the 49ers, the Bill Walsh era, becoming just, you know, the biggest thing in football. And then you look at what's happened since there in recent years with the Warriors. I mean, let's put it this way. I have a 10-year-old son now who has grown up his entire life in L.A., and all he has is Steph Curry jerseys, Buster Posey jerseys, all that. And I feel bad about it sometimes because I'm like, am I doing this wrong? You know, like, he grew up in L.A., but by the same token, it's been organic for him. I mean, he was born, and those teams all started winning championships. So that's why he kind of gravitated that way.
So growing up listening to KNBR, that starts to light the fuse a little bit. When did you get your first actual break in the business to start working in the format?
The first actual break, not in sports talk, but the first actual break to have, you know, somebody kind of let me on the air happened in either my second or third year of college. And it's actually kind of a fun, quick story. I had gotten a job doing public address announcing for a local junior college basketball team in San Luis Obispo. It's called Cuesta College. So I'm sitting there doing those games and got to know the radio guy a little bit. And he invited me one day out to a baseball game the next day. And he said, why don't you come out and I'll have you on and do a couple innings with me. And I said, cool, let's do it. And so I head on out there and it's an outdoor booth. It was really just a table. And it starts to drizzle a little bit, so we can't really keep any notes. Everything's kind of getting washed away. And after about two innings, he looks at me and goes, man, I don't feel very good. And I just kind of like, well, you know, sorry to hear that. And then we do another inning together, and he looks at me and goes, man, I'm out of here. I don't think I can do this anymore. And he gets up and he leaves, and he's like, go for it, bud. You got it. And to this day, I still don't know how sick he actually was or wasn't, but I think what he did was he ran to a phone and he called his program director and said, I just threw this kid on the air, take a listen. And they called me in the very next day and offered me the job doing high school football play-by-play on their station and doing some weekend stuff. And so that's how it all got started back in college. And then, you know, kind of from a sports talk standpoint, the first thing that got going was, after college, I was kind of doing, there was an outfit in the Bay Area called Command Audio. It's kind of a failed effort of what Sirius and XM ended up doing. And when that went belly up, my boss there had been a veteran of Clear Channel in San Diego. He kind of made some phone calls and I got down to Extra 690 in San Diego, which was, you know, just such a huge station at the time. And so that's what kind of got me going in those circles.
So when you did get to San Diego and you're at 690, what essentially were you doing and how long were you there for?
Yeah, I was actually only there for about 6 to 9 months or so. I was doing updates, you know, getting to do some feature packages on Hacksaw's show and things like that. And working a lot with the coach, John Quintero, who's still an awesome guy bouncing around in San Diego. And Quintero actually had a lot to do with what happened, which was the new outfit opening up in L.A., Sporting News Radio affiliate coming out there that was going to do some localization. And the guy who was going to run the show up there was just a fan, I think, and an admirer of Extra 690 as a station. So he talked to a lot of the show hosts down there and said, you know, who are some of your update guys, your younger guys that you really like? And Coach Quintero in particular was the one who threw my name around and was able to get that gig. And so went from there up to L.A. and was basically just, you know, like many of us are, a reporter and updates and a little fill in here and there. That's where it started and kind of worked my way up from there, to show hosting and then moving over to ESPN. That year right there, which I think was 2001, you know, started what became, you know, kind of that 15 to 16 year run of doing stuff in Los Angeles.
The first time I really started hearing it was around 2004, 2005, maybe a little after that, when you and Tony were working together. Take me through how that situation came together with Tony, because obviously once you start working with a guy of that magnitude at that time, it really elevates your name as well.
No question. And it's always, you know, stuff like that, you know, there has to be a certain aspect of it just kind of landing in your lap. So what happened was I was co-hosting a morning show in Los Angeles, and the lead host of that show got to contract time, and I have no idea to this day if they didn't want to re-sign him or he didn't want to re-sign, whatever it was. He moved on, and what I've learned over and over in my life is sometimes those scariest moments where you're just like, I have no idea what's about to happen, sometimes become the best moments. So there was about a 2-3 month period where I was just kind of in limbo, and I was leading the show, and they're bringing in different guest hosts, and I was completely unprepared for that role at that time, but I did the best I could. And then next thing you know, Sporting News comes in and says, we've hired Tony Bruno, and this show is not only going to be on in L.A., but it's going to be done from L.A., and it's going to be nationally syndicated. And that was just it was a wonderful time in my life for the, you know, reasons you kind of insinuated right there. Like, I mean, I just learned a ton from Tony. We got to travel around and do shows in different markets, which was really eye-opening for me to understand the differences of each market and the way that, you know, one thing can kind of make one market tick and it doesn't work in another market. And So there were just tremendous lessons and a ton of fun with that run that he and I had together.
You still right now dabble with Fox Sports Radio, doing some work on a national scale in addition to doing local.
Yep.
And when you're working on a national show, I've went through this working with Dan Patrick, and I just was asking Trey Wingo and Mike Golic this question the other day. When you're on nationwide, let's say you're on 100 cities, and you're trying to evaluate whether or not the show is working, I always hear people tell me, well, you just know that it works. And I'm like, well, that's a crappy answer, okay? Look, you can't just judge it on Twitter and say that, well, everyone likes it. Well, that's not – show me some evidence of that, right? And I'll give you a quick story. When I worked at ESPN, I'd get called in on a Monday. You guys are on fire. We're killing it in Dallas and L.A. Love the show. Keep up what you're doing. On Tuesday, I get called in. Guys, we got to talk about the show. New York and Chicago, we're getting our ass kicked. What the hell's going on? And I'm like, wait a second. Am I supposed to be worried about New York, Chicago, or Dallas and L.A.? So having been at a different network, in your case with Sporting News and now at Fox, how do you guys evaluate it?
Well, I mean, you know, there's two answers that both need to be stated. And one of them is, I find, you know, hosting at times, at least for these kinds of questions and subjects, there's a little bit of ignorance is bliss, which meaning, you know, I mean, you could micromanage this market and that market and, you know, you make yourself go crazy. And I think always as a host, I like to know what the data says. I am a student of the game, no question. But you also have to, I think, just kind of do your thing, because as you said, whether it's market by market or even listener by listener, there's always going to be someone who thinks you're great and always going to be somebody who thinks you stink. And there's absolutely no way around that. And in fact, I've certainly gotten to a point in my career where I seek that. I mean, I think if you're not pushing some buttons and making some markets uncomfortable or some listeners uncomfortable, you're probably not doing enough. You're not being compelling enough. So I think you need to take some risks to just, you know, do what you do well. And hope that it will resonate in as many places as possible. But beyond that, you know, I also think the safest way to do it, and there's no way to know if something that's resonating in Los Angeles is also going to resonate in Omaha, but you do play the hits. I don't think necessarily as much as some media outlets right now that, you know, literally won't leave subjects of, you know, LeBron James, the Dallas Cowboys, Alabama football, and that's it. But you do play the hit, especially in national radio, where they're not going to get to know your personality as well. It's mm-hmm. not that tight little unit like you have in a local market. There's not as much time to build some story that has layers and go through all of it. You know, when we get in there on the weekends on Fox, it's pretty much, you know, we're going to have seven or eight things that we're willing to kind of play with and play with them at a level that, you know, everybody can kind of understand and hopefully relate to. And then, you know, beyond that, I just have a lot of faith, you know, whether it's down in the South or the Northeast or whatever it is, you know, that there'll be something for everybody in what we're talking about.
And so obviously you've seen the other side of Fox. You spent over 6 years in Los Angeles working for ESPN there, 710.
Yep.
Take me through how that was strategically different versus what you do at Fox. Obviously, that was local versus national, but nonetheless, you've seen it from the 570 and 710 side. How are the two different?
In local radio, the first thing that kind of stands out on that is this kind of underlying pressure to super serve and do right by, you know, whoever your play-by-play partners are. So when I was at 710 ESPN in L.A., that was the home of the Lakers. It was the home of USC. And that was something that was on our minds every day, no matter what we were talking about. Because, you know, while I think some listeners sometimes are wondering, hey, do you have that opinion just because it's the home of the Lakers? No, I can't say this for every host, but I always try to be 100% honest, 100% authentic. If you hear it out of my mouth, I believe it. But do you also have to run that through the prism of, you know, can I present this maybe in a little bit of a lighter or stronger way? Because, you know, we're attached and you know, we have to obviously keep that in mind that our partners have their own interests here as well. So that was something that no matter what day of the week, no matter what show you were doing, that was under consideration. And also, you know, you're only talking to L.A. at that time, and you know L.A., you live in L.A., so you get much more into one foxhole. You know, to me, I'm always picturing a listener in my mind. I'm picturing somebody driving in their car, and I'm picturing my voice coming through the speakers, and I'm talking to that person. And if I know that that person is a Los Angelino, I think that there's a certain way that I know that I can talk to that person. To the point you were just bringing up, then when we go national, you're not necessarily going to have the same partnerships. So there's a little bit of a broader kind of an approach that you can take. And that person you're picturing in the car could be from anywhere. So I just think, there's a little bit more room, a little bit more rope nationally to kind of take things, wherever you'd like to take them. But by the same token, that national conversation has to be a little bit more surface level. That local conversation can go a little deeper because you're all just this little group. And, you know, if you're in L.A., you know everything that's gone on with Lonzo Ball in the last 6 months. You know that, you know. And so we've all gone on that journey together. It feels like a little group. Nationally, most people do. Some people don't. And so you have to navigate that when you're talking to them.
Let's talk about that six-year run at 710. So, you know, when you're somewhere for 6 years, you're going to do a number of different things. When you look back on that period of your career, what stands out to you from a positive standpoint from that experience, and what are some of the bigger challenges you dealt with?
Yeah, I mean, a couple things that stand out as a positive is, for me, that was really where I felt like I grew from somebody who is simply able to be in this business into somebody that was really starting to understand the business and my own strengths and my own weaknesses. Those were the 6 years where I got my confidence, you know, that understanding. When I talk to, you know, people who are trying to get in the business now, I always tell them, like, the first thing you need to do, and it's not easy to do, is understand yourself. You need to know who that quintessential you is so that you can share that with the audience, because that's what they will respond to. That's what they'll relate to, is that human element. It's hard to find that in your 20s, just because, you know. And so that was when I was getting into my 30s. The best thing that happened there was that after being a guy that did updates and filled in and went into this game and that game, I was given two weekend shows, and they on Saturday and Sunday mornings, I had 3 hours on Saturday and 4 hours on Sunday solo every week. And they really let me do what I wanted to do, and they would review it with me, but they gave me some space to learn and make some mistakes here and there, because it wasn't, 8 a.m. on a weekday. It was the weekend. So, they saw something in me and they let me kind of grow. And it's, whatever I'm doing now, doing weekend solo, 7 hours of solo radio in a 28 hour period on the weekends, there's not much that's more difficult than that. So it grew my confidence in a big way. I learned a lot about radio. I learned about me. And that's what I think set me up for what I've been able to do since then. And, when I finally did get to a weekday position, at that station, it was a partnership with Michael Thompson. And I will always look back on that with a ton of reverence as well, just because he's a unique human being and a wonderful person. And, I felt like there were some good things that we were able to accomplish with that show. So those are the things I look back on and really smile about. On the other, the other side of the question, definitely frustrations in that. While ESPN was wonderful to me, ESPN is one of those companies that they've got so many cooks in the kitchen at all times that everything takes forever. And sometimes nothing can be agreed upon, because whatever one boss thinks, there's another boss that disagrees. And it's got, you know, the flagpole's got to run up for so long. So I've told this story before. I was literally, I had a conversation at a USC football game with my general manager in, let's say it was October. It was mid-October one year. And they had been telling me, hey, your role is about to grow, and we want to get you in on the weekday. And I said, fantastic. You've been telling me that for a little while. You know, are we getting close? And they said, we're getting very close. And I said, give me a timeline. Like, is this definitely going to happen by the end of the year? And they scoffed. They were like, oh, for sure. This is going to happen by the end of the year. That's the next 6 weeks. It'll be done, I promise. It happened the following September. So it was almost another year before it happened. So as a company, they're a big animal, and they can be a wonderful animal, but things go just beyond snail's pace, and so there were frustrations there. I mean, there were plenty of days. There was a lot of blood, sweat, and tears, and frustration in trying to get where I was trying to go before we got there.
I want to jump ahead to San Diego in a second, but I want to make sure to put a bow on L.A. because there's one question you would know better than anybody, having the time that you spent there. From the outside looking in, it's always been baffling. It's the second largest market in the country, yet from a sports radio performance standpoint, it's never popped. And if you do a four share there, you're celebrated into the Hall of Fame. You do a four share in New York, Philadelphia, or Boston, you're out of a job. You've been there. You've lived it. Why doesn't it perform higher?
It's not for the reasons that people think. Is the quickest answer I can give you. I know what the stock thought between competitive sports fans in different markets. The East Coast will look at an LA and say, you're soft, you're flaky, they don't actually care. And the other answer is, well, there's a lot to do. It's sunny, there's the beach. People aren't necessarily focused. I've actually never bought into any of those things. It's one of the reasons I think I've been able to find at least a measure of success in Southern California. People absolutely love their sports here, care about their teams a lot. But I do think there is just a fundamental difference to the way people consume sports. If you want to take LA and New York or an LA and Boston as kind of the examples, I think what happens in sports here is people will care like crazy about their sports. But for the most part, if a team, for instance, suffers a frustrating loss, a Los Angeles fan the next morning is going to kind of be over it. They may be bothered about it on the drive home, but it doesn't necessarily go all the way deep to their core and bother them the next day, and they carry it around with them. A lot of East Coast fans, I mean, they just live it. They love it. They wear it, and I mean, it has their self-esteem and their mood could be affected on, the strike zone the night before at Fenway Park. And sports radio is so built on that. Like, we come in the next morning and talk about what we saw the night before. And while a fan in Boston or New York, you could talk about the strike zone in the seventh inning, and they're like, "Oh yeah, like I was watching that, and I'm still ticked off about it too." An LA fan probably cared about it at the time, but you know, yeah, we probably do have a shorter attention span on the West Coast. So they've kind of moved on. So if you're doing something at 10 a.m. the next day, you need to have something else interesting or entertaining. You can't just open up the mics and say, boy, that game last night was crazy. There's just not enough percentage of people here. There are some, but not enough who have that, you know, still bothering them at their core that many hours later.
So now you go from LA to San Diego, and San Diego doesn't necessarily love LA. So as the guy coming in from LA, how does that go over when you join Extra 1360?
You know, there's comments here and there, but for the most part, it has been actually smoother than maybe even we expected. You know, I do have my roots of starting there. And even when I got my first start in L.A., because there was no football and they wanted me covering every game, they sent me down to home Charger games. So I was covering the Chargers for a few years. And, you know, I think that people might have, when we first arrived, they kind of look at it like, you know, okay, what's this? Who's this? Even my partner, Rich Ornberger, while he was a former Charger, he's also a former Patriot. He's an East Coast guy and had been living in L.A. prior to coming down to San Diego. So there were probably a couple people that were like, oh, here comes a couple guys in a car from L.A. and they're going to do the show here. But I haven't found it to be necessarily all that much of a challenge to kind of navigate that. You know, I mean, I've lived in the city. I understand the city. I certainly understand the dynamic. It's almost been an advantage in a way, having spent a lot of time in L.A., spent a lot of time in San Diego, and San Diego's favorite team right upon my arrival ups and moves to L.A.
Right.
Like, I can really bring that story from all sides with a deep understanding of both markets. So I think that's actually been a carrot for our show. And that's the other part of the conversation, too, by the way. I mean, San Diego as a sports market changed forever, like 3 months after I got there. And so it's been an interesting time in San Diego where maybe even sports fans there, too, have had to kind of take a step back, figure out how diehard are they, how much do they care. And I'm someone, you know, my way and my way of thinking and doing shows is probably because of San Francisco, L.A., San Diego. I'm not one that is going to scream for 3 hours because an umpire missed a strike in the seventh inning. And so it fits, you know, it fits. I think I get the people there, and so I'm able to talk to them. And, you know, it might have taken a few months for some people, but I think they know that, we're a San Diego show.
With the Chargers moving out of the market, how does that change your approach in doing a show every day? Because when the news goes from we can't wait to talk football to, oh, my God, that's the team that bailed on us, that does change the temperament of the audience. It also has to affect your behavior as a host, because how could you be excited about something when they just bailed on you? I mean, what do you do from that standpoint? Do you go more NFL? Do you continue to talk Chargers 5 days a week? What's your approach?
The first thing that goes through your mind when this happens, you know, is, oh, bleep. You know what I mean? Like,
yep.
there, we all had that moment where you're like, my gosh, like, there's one professional sports team left in this town, and it's a baseball team, and it's the Padres, and that's not going to resonate on most days. But what's amazing, and to go back to something I said earlier, where sometimes your scariest moments in life are actually a blessing, I have found, I don't know that every host there would share this, but I have found that this has been, in some ways, a little bit freeing. It's opened our minds, I think the audience as well, in a lot of new directions. So what we've done is to kind of have our hands in a few different places. There are still a lot of Charger fans in San Diego. So we don't ignore the team. They do get a little bit more coverage than all of the other teams. But what we've done is we've followed the data. So the NFL draft ratings in San Diego from last year to 2017 were flat, totally even. As many people watched the NFL draft the year after the Chargers left as the year that the Chargers were still there. And if you look at NFL ratings now during the weekend, Charger ratings in general have been cut in half. However, they're still strong when compared to other cities. NFL viewership in San Diego, based on ratings, is still one of the top 10 cities in the whole country. So what that's allowed us to do is we can still serve the Charger fans that are there. We can also serve the people who are very heavy anti-Charger, because that's a big portion of our audience. They care more about the Chargers, but in a negative way, the hate watchers, right?
Mm-hmm.
So this is like we were talking about earlier with those partner organizations, and sometimes you have to navigate how you're talking about a team. Well, we were the home of the Chargers. Now suddenly we can be completely honest in all directions. So we can go positive on the Chargers. We can be super honest and make fun of them sometimes, because they make that pretty easy, by the way, with that organization. And we can almost own the whole AFC West. Like you said, Rams, Raiders, they're going through a relocation. Relocation is a local story. So we've been able to localize more things And then even, you know, my partner was drafted by Bill Belichick. I've said this a lot about local shows, things that are inherent to our room, our pairing, the two hosts on the show, those become local because we're local. So once we've established our personalities in San Diego, there are certain things about us that the audience knows and we can talk about. So there's a piece of our show that can localize anything Patriots, anything Bill Belichick, because Rich has insight into how that all works. And it's an NFL and football city, and San Diego State is having a good year. So we've been able to talk a lot about that. And it's kind of opened up a little bit of a new toy box for us in a way.
So talk to me about working with an athlete, because as you just alluded to, playing for Bill Belichick is going to give you insight that the general listener is not going to be privy to. Now that becomes an attraction to listen to. On the other hand, you know, when you are playing professional sports, your whole life is built on playing professional sports. It's not thinking about being behind a microphone and prepping for a 3 or 4 hour show every day. So what would you say are the highlights and the lowlights, or, you know, the challenges that you guys have had to overcome to build a great show?
Yeah, this guy, the beauty of him is that, like you said, usually the pluses of a pro athlete are that insight, what they've experienced, and they can share it. The minuses are they don't necessarily know exactly how the business works, the finer points of what they're trying to do, and they often have no interest in learning them.
Right.
Because they are pro athletes, and they're known as, you know, people are going to do some things for me, and my name value is going to be enough to carry, and all I need to do is be here and it'll work out, which is rarely the case, by the way. But this guy is, more than anyone I've ever worked with, and I've worked with a lot of athletes, he is the combo of those two things. He has his professional experience, and he, like you said, he's a big personality, he's a funny guy, he's well-spoken, but more than anyone I've ever seen, this guy just has that thirst. He is a total student of the game. He works his butt off. He wants to soak it in on a daily basis. He asks questions. When he learns a lesson, he rarely has to learn it more than once. And so, you know, we've gone through over a year together. I mean, the curve this guy is on, it's intense. It's crazy how much better he gets each month. And so he really has learned exactly, you know, what makes, you know, good topic building. And we talk about stuff off the air where we're like, so here's why, you know, this is just this little thing that maybe we want to avoid or whatever. And like I said, when he hears it once, he's able to apply it really quick. He's a really smart guy and a really funny guy. So, you know, the challenges with him is not even just that he's an ex-athlete. Going back to the beginning of our show, I mean, this guy was like just complete newbie, totally green, had
right.
never done this.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, like, how did you even know this was going to work? Because you guys started out together. It's a brand new show. And as you know, Mark, chemistry is everything in a show. So how did you guys know you would have that chemistry?
I got to give some credit, at least partially, in the vision of the guys who put us together, and, you know, Brian Long down there, who's a wonderful program director, I know you know, and we had done a sum total of one show together before they, and, you know, then there was, it was a big rebrand. We were launching two new shows at the same time, and so there were a bunch of new personalities coming into the room, and, you know, they pieced them together and went with it, and I think there was a little bit of faith that it would work, but there was probably also an openness to, let's see if this works, and then we can shuffle the deck if we need. And, you know, there was a process for sure. And, you know, yes, there were days where that green side of him came out, and I was like, oh my gosh, like, what was that? How are we going to get through those moments? But those were few and far between and very fleeting because he does soak up stuff at such a rate. I mean, certainly faster than even I did when I was starting out as a broadcaster. So I think, you know, that was that way for a few months, and there was some, you know, therefore learning on the job and gaining chemistry as we were going. But it's worked out really well. And the station is seeing some success and has recently kind of, moved ahead of the standard bearing sports station there in the market. We're doing that with some challenges in terms of like our signal strength isn't theirs and all of those things. But we're really seeing gains. And so that feels good because it's actually only been, let me think, what are we in here? We're in month maybe 15 since we started. Feels like even longer than that. And the numbers and the experience and everything have really been positive. So, and I mean, that's a credit to him more than anyone else.
I want to ask you some broadcast industry stuff because there are a couple of topics that have come up over the last couple of months that I find fascinating. And so as a guy who's on the air, you also have the responsibility of connecting with people on social media. And you saw, like everyone did, the firestorm that was created with the Jemele Hill, President Trump stuff. And, you know, you have certain talent who love to get out there, be candid, be themselves on social media, and they'll go into any space because to them, hey, I'm unfiltered, I'm going to do what I do. Then you have others who are like, you know what, like Jim Rome I sat down with, and he said, you're never going to even know which way I vote because I don't get into that stuff. If you're advising someone how to approach it, what's your strategy and what would you tell them on how to navigate social media so it can be a benefit to you but not a negative?
I mean, as you will know, I mean, there's so many little quirks to that conversation because the big thing also depends on who you work for.
Right.
First and foremost, like the first advice I'd give to anyone is know your company and keep your job, right? Because the rope that you're going to be given at, say, a Fox where I am now versus what you get at ESPN could not be more different.
Mm-hmm.
Fox is going to allow people a lot of room to be themselves. No doubt when this got really hot over the last year, we've gotten the emails in our inbox about how nobody cares what our politics are. And, you know, they're here for sports. And my motto is always, look, I'm here for the fun. So I try. I mean, there are days where there's something big that happened and you know, you have to talk about it. But for the most part, I try to keep things light and therefore, you know, not poking too hard at people to where you're really going to turn off a large group. But with all that said, know your company and keep your job. But I'm a big proponent of let people know a little bit about who you are, because I think that that's how you connect with an audience. And sure, there are going to be people that might not want to listen to you after that. But I believe that you gain more than you lose. That relatability factor of being a human being. There's nothing more relatable than a human story. People will find something in that to which they relate. There will be moments where you make them uncomfortable. As I said earlier, I think that's imperative. If you simply want to play it straight down the middle and not upset anybody, I think to me, even if you do it well, all you do is sound like a C+ or a B- to a lot of people because you're just kind of running right down the middle. And that's not how people are. Like, how many people do we know in our lives where you're like, gosh, I don't even know what that person thinks. Like, we're not going to be friends with that person. There's nothing there to hold on to. So I would rather somebody is sometimes uncomfortable and it's okay to disagree, but know a little bit about who I am. There is definitely a line. You don't want to get on a soapbox politically, but I'm definitely cool with sharing your perspective. And then if someone is calling or tweeting or whatever with harsh disagreement, you know, just be open to what they're saying too. And I think if you're open to them, they'll remain open to you.
Now let me spin that to something that just took place this past week, because in Boston, Mike Felger came under fire because he had some harsh things to say about Roy Halladay following his death in an airplane accident. And, you know, there are a couple different groups here. You got the first group that aren't even in Boston, and they see the news and they go, that's it, I want them fired, jobless, homeless, all that. And meanwhile, you know, they may live in Oklahoma or Texas and they're not really the audience. On the other hand, you have the other side, which is going, First Amendment, free speech, a guy should be able to say whatever he wants without consequence. And then you kind of have that middle group, which is, well, should he publicly apologize for what he said? Should he be suspended? Should they just verbally warn him? That being said, as a guy who's on the air and you're trying to walk that line, be edgy, speak your mind and not be, you know, predictable and ruffle feathers and make people think, when someone does something like that and offers an insensitive commentary, especially the day after the guy died, where do you stand on that?
Let me also add one other thing, which I'd love your response on. I mean, you've been a programmer forever. Is there any thought in your mind when you saw that the whole thing was a publicity stunt? I mean, I know that he came on and had to apologize the next day. I didn't see any talk of a suspension. I didn't see any talk. I mean, the station didn't seem all that bothered by it. I mean, does that ever cross your mind?
You know, here's the thing. In the past, Mike has said, he had a comment that he roots for the wall against Dale Earnhardt. He has done a couple of those things before. This is kind of his personality. And look, one of the reasons why he's a highly successful talent in that market, he's double-digit share guy, is because he's uncomfortable and he has strong takes. And so the biggest thing I had an issue with is I just thought sometimes you've got to read the room and there are certain things better left unsaid. Like, what are you gaining off of that at that moment in time, the day after the guy died? If he says that a week from now, it's not the same. But the day after, they haven't even buried the guy yet, and you're saying that. And I thought it was telling that NBC Sports in Boston, the TV side, suspended him. The radio side did not. There's no right or wrong. It's just more or less, what do you do in that situation? And you're the guy in the middle of it. So I'm sure there's something you've said on the air that you go, oh, geez, what the hell did I just say? That was probably thought out, you know?
Yeah, 100%. No, happens. I mean, in any career, that's going to happen multiple times. But, you know, this story broke while Rich and I were on the air. And so, we had to kind of navigate that on the fly. And obviously, when it's happening, there's really nothing to express other than, you know, sorrow and pass along the information and, in some way, in a, you know, however you kind of see fit, pass along your unfortunate and heartfelt thoughts about what's happening. At our station, we did that at about, 1:30 in the afternoon was when the news finally broke that it was indeed Roy Halladay. By 3 o'clock, the show coming on after us was already dabbling, I thought in a very classy way, but dabbling with the unfortunate side of, was this a selfish move by Roy Halladay? Like, that word came up.
Right.
And so I was actually already kind of hopped up on this story even before the Boston thing came in, because I wanted to come in the next day and say, hold on a second. Two things. One, there was just flat out the take that I disagree with, because I'm like, listen, if following our passion, even though it can be dangerous, is bad, there's all kinds of things that I could point basically to any human being.
Right.
You know, do you smoke? Do you drink? How much chocolate do you eat after dinner? I mean, there's all kinds of things that I could even.
Don't go in the ocean. There's a shark in there. I mean, come on.
Right. It's like, wait a minute. You know, I mean, there's all kinds of things we do that may not be good for us, but we do them for enjoyment. So there was the take side of it that I was like, that's totally unfair. But then what you touched on to me was even bigger. It's like, it's way too soon. And when is too soon to go to something either funny or pushing the envelope? That can be a difficult thing to figure out. But one thing I know is that when somebody well-liked surprisingly passes away, 48 hours is not enough time. At minimum, I would have waited until next week before I said anything that was at least, towing the line of critical. And even if I had gone there, I always would have done it in a classy way, because it's almost like these guys are—they're picking up for the family, right? The wife, the kids. This guy's selfish. Well, then ask yourself, how would the wife and kids feel if they were listening to your show right now?
Bingo.
Do you think that they would have? Yeah, would they have been like, oh yeah, he's picking up for us?
Think about this: the wife and kids are crying their eyes out right now. And now somebody's going to be alerting them, hey, by the way, somebody is saying that your husband's a moron and an idiot and he got what he deserved right now. Would you say that to the family right now? Probably not. It's the same thing like when you tell a host, look, you can be critical of anyone in any locker room. You can rip the hell out of the team all you want. Don't say anything on the air you wouldn't say to his face. If you think Kobe Bryant is garbage, that's fine. Have some evidence to support your stance, but be prepared that he might be listening. And if he comes up to you, be willing to defend yourself. Don't just be the studio tough guy who can't ever look a guy in the eye. Because you're going to be accountable, you got to do that.
100%. Yeah, I mean that's that. Yeah, so that's where I felt like it was kind of a faux opportunistic outrage, because it's like if you're so upset on behalf of the family, then I would probably try to take the tone of the family, and I'm very sure that the family would not have taken that tone.
This is something I was having a conversation with someone this past week, and we were talking about some of the big changes in our industry. You've got Mike and Mike who are leaving the air. You've got Mike Francesa who's leaving the air. I mean, these are institutions that have been there for, you know, two decades. In Mike and Mike's case, not as long, but close enough. And one of the things that came up during this conversation was those jobs are not as attractive as they once were. And I started thinking about that. I'm like, well, are they? And if those aren't attractive like they once were, then what the hell is attractive? Because, you know, like we can all talk about the boom of Amazon and Google and Facebook and Twitter. That's great. But are they paying your mortgage? Are they giving you the platform to do what you love and to connect with an audience in this space? So I was curious just to pick your brain. First of all, if you agree with the notion that those jobs are not as attractive, or maybe you think they are, and also what you think is still attractive?
That's an interesting question. I mean, as far as are those jobs still as attractive, I mean, they're close. I mean, I always look, following a legend is never the perfect place to be. I mean, I've long thought, you know, for years in Los Angeles, like, so who is taking over when Vin Scully leaves? That's going to be a tough gig. From those perspectives, they're a little bit tougher. Obviously, the idea of just even being an employee at an ESPN right now maybe doesn't necessarily carry as much of a smile as it used to, because it feels like that company has gone through this PR run of being kind of anti-employee, even though I'm not 100% sure how true that is. So, I mean, is there a little bit of shine off of them? Yeah, but at the same time, I think overall that's a pretty cynical thought. I mean, listen, I teach now as well at the collegiate level for sports broadcasting, and I can tell you that working for ESPN or Fox or whatever is still a massive dream for a lot of people, and I would never, you know, try to tell anybody that's not the case. I mean, that's absolutely, in many ways, those are the crown jewels, and everyone should still chase those. And the idea that AM radio is about to die and all this has been overstated. You know, that said, now what's attractive to me? Now, I'm maybe more, you know, into the halftime, early third quarter of my career, at least knock on wood, I hope. So certainly my perspective changes a little bit now as a dad of three kids, as somebody who's seen a lot and done a lot in the business. I think you do naturally start to search for things where you can kind of have a little bit more creative input. I have no plans anytime soon to not be doing what I'm doing with Fox, but I do have the desire, you know, to branch out into new arenas, both in terms of what we're talking about and the platform on which we're talking about it. I'm launching a podcast here, and one of the reasons is because it's something new that I want to talk about, but it's also because I just want to get more into the podcast realm. You know, I think by nature, people who are in our business like to spread ourselves out in a few different directions. That might just be because of our inherent fear of losing the jobs that we have. That's kind of what's attractive to me now is reaching out into some new directions that give some, you know, scratch some new creative itches. But no, I'm not down on, you know, people getting big time radio jobs for ESPN or Fox or whatever it may be. That's all still wonderful.
I'm going to wrap up with you in a minute with our quick hits, but I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you for a good Brian Long story, because I've known Brian, your program director, probably about 7 years now. And, you know, he's got a strategy for everything he does, but I'm sure there's got to be one or two that are floating through your head right now regarding your PD. So give me one good Brian Long story.
From a personal standpoint, the one that stands out is that once Brian and I got to a point where we were good friends and respected the heck out of each other professionally, Brian finally shared with me that when he first met me, he was like, who is this snot-nosed puke mouth trying to come in here and take my job, get this guy out of here? So when I first met Brian, he was doing a night show at 710 ESPN, and I was just kind of coming in and doing some weekend stuff and some high school sports stuff and, you know, some USC stuff on the weekends. And so I was filling in here and there. And we definitely had that dynamic of, like, you know, he's looking at me like, who is this guy trying to come in here? And I kind of was walking in, you know, looking around like, okay, where am I going to fit in? There's no question. So it's one of those classic relationships that probably started off, at least behind closed doors, clashing a little bit more than maybe I even realized at the time. I think he had to reconcile with it, where he was like, you know what, Mark's just trying to, he's just trying to make it in this business just like the rest of us are. And so the relationship has kind of bobbed and weaved then through the years in a lot of different ways, to the point where, you know, Brian is now my boss. 3 years ago, Brian was basically my guidance counselor. Like, Brian kept me sane, because, as you know, he left L.A., went up to Seattle, crushed it with a station up there. And during that time, I go back to what I was telling you about, you know, being at ESPN, and my gosh, like, things aren't coming together as quickly as I want or whatever. And we would talk every couple of weeks, and he would calm me down. When we finally did get to a point where I was negotiating a contract, he was practically my de facto agent. I mean, he was definitely someone I was leaning on for advice on a daily basis during that process. So this is something I really cherish right now, the fact that I am working for Brian Long, because I've never had a boss that I don't really look at as a boss. I look at him as a friend. I look at him as you know, a mentor. In many ways, and there's just such the utmost respect there. And he's a good dude who has worn many hats. And so for anybody who kind of knows him in a professional sense, he kind of has a good professional exterior. But you know, behind that, he's just a really good, smart person.
Let's wrap up on what I call quick hits. I'm going to hit you with four questions. The first thought that pops in your head to each of these, okay?
You got it.
The best host in San Diego, not named Mark Willard, is who?
Well, I have to say Rich Ornberger.
Well, now your morning and afternoon show are going to take exception. But if you don't say Rich, you're going to probably deal with him for 15 hours a day and piss him off.
I'm saying Rich Ornberger, but I'm also saying it not just because I have to. Like, I truly believe that.
The person who's taught Mark Willard the most in sports radio is who?
Probably Colin Cowherd, and in many ways that he doesn't even know. He's a good friend. We've talked about it, but I also just, I've gleaned a lot by listening to him.
The better sports radio market, San Diego or Los Angeles?
In this moment, I'm going to say San Diego right now, because there are more places that we can go. There's more creativity and more fun than that we can have, instead of Kobe.
And then finally, the last person besides your wife who you called baby via text message is who?
Unfortunately, it is Jason Barrett. I have to be honest. That's right. Someday over a beer, I'll explain to you who I was talking to and what I said. It was meant for my wife, though. It was.
As soon as I got it, I was like, okay, that's coming up on the podcast. I'll figure out a way to weave it in.
Yeah, and as soon as I saw it, I said, oh, crap. At least it was clean, right?
Yes, yes. He's Mark Willard. You can catch him on Extra 1360 in San Diego. He hosts the Mark and Rich Show weekdays 12 to 3. Also on Twitter, @Mark_T_Willard. It's been great catching up, buddy. I appreciate you taking the time to do this, and continued success on your end.
Jason, I wish the same to you, and I thank you so much for doing it.
This is the Barrett Sports Media Podcast.
My thanks again to Mark Willard for dropping by. You know, there was one part of that conversation that resonated with me. It was when we were talking about the city of Los Angeles. As a media market, it's the second largest in the United States, and yet it's never been a hotbed for sports radio. Some will point to the demographics, others will say it's a lack of the NFL for over a decade. And then there's, of course, the argument to be made that how would it perform if it were on FM versus AM? All of those might be legitimate reasons, but regardless, it's never popped in a big way when compared to the rest of the country. Now, I don't think it's fair to measure Los Angeles against New York, Detroit, Philadelphia, and Boston. East Coast fans are more rabid. But that being said, I do think it's fair to compare it to San Francisco. The Bay Area is also a big city. People there don't freak out in May when a runner gets sent in the third inning of a meaningless game the way folks might on the East Coast. They've got the same number of baseball and football teams. In fact, LA has more basketball and NHL teams than the Bay Area. But the mentality of people are pretty similar. We can blame it on meters, we can blame it on demographics and all those other excuses. And I'm not suggesting there haven't been shows that have done well, because, for example, Mason and Ireland have done extremely well in LA. I've just always been surprised that the market has not popped in a bigger way. If you have the answer, I certainly would love to hear it. JBarrett@sportsradiopd.com. But that's going to do it for this episode. Again, my thanks to Mark Willard for stopping by. A reminder that if you oversee a company or radio station and are looking to elevate your brand's performance, I do work as a sports radio strategist and consultant, and I am available. For more information, log on to sportsradiopd.com. My services and contact information are available there. A few quick things. Radio Inc. will have their top 30 in sports radio coming out in December. I'll be writing a column for the issue, so be sure to keep an eye out for it. I'm also sitting down for a few hours with one of the best in our industry. That'll be part of a forthcoming piece on the website. Look for that on sportsradiopd.com sometime after Thanksgiving. On the job front, I'm helping a great station with their search for a digital media manager. The job opening is posted on the website. I'm also looking for a sports radio news writer and additional columnists. Send your resume and writing samples to jbarrett@sportsradiopd.com. In the words of Kid Rock, if it looks good, you'll see it. If it sounds good, you'll hear it. If it's marketed right, you'll buy it. But if it's real, you'll feel it. So be authentic in everything you do. Until next time, I'm Jason Barrett. Thanks for stopping by.
You don't want to believe it, but maybe the show is over.
Thank you for listening to the Barrett Sports Media Podcast. To stay updated on the latest sports media news, follow Jason on Twitter @SportsRadioPD and visit our website, sportsradiopd.com.